Hello again, everyone. You are listening to episode 2 of Law Out Loud, the podcast in which PhD researchers from the Erasmus Graduate School of Law explain their research to a senior academic in the field, and the latter, in turn, uses their expertise to ask questions of the junior. Today, we're joined by Tita and Zandra. That is our PhD candidate, Priscilla Penestica, or Tita. Welcome, Tita.
Thank you.
And Zandra Kramer, Professor of Private Law at the Erasmus School of Law and Professor of Private International Law at Utrecht University and Deputy Judge at the District Court of Rotterdam. Zandra, you must be very busy, so welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, a lot has happened since we recorded the pilot episode of Law Out Loud. We'd hoped to record this episode back in March, but that, of course, wasn't possible. I'm happy to say we are now back in the campus at the Erasmus recording studio, albeit safely distanced from each other. The pandemic is far from over, but the Law Out Loud team hope to record a further 3 episodes in the coming 2 months to complete the first series. In Law Out Loud, our episodes cover the legal responses to new social, economic, and technological developments. In the pilot episode, we heard from Yoshe and Johan discussing private lease models and consumer protection in the mobility sector, which, due to technological innovation, may require some adaptation to the regulatory framework. Similarly, today, Tita will explain her PhD research topic to Zandra. That topic concerns choice of law in international commercial contracts. The relevant social and economic developments here are globalization and the increase in cross-border trade and commerce which have resulted. Tita will explain to us why choice of law in commercial contracts matters and how a governing framework taken from private international law can ensure that the commercial benefits presented by globalization are maximized. So Tita, over to you.
Thank you, Liam. Hello everyone, I'm Priscilla Penestica, as already introduced by Liam, but I'm usually called by my nickname, Tita. I'm a PhD researcher at Erasmus Graduate School of Law, and today I'm joined by my supervisor, Professor Zandra Kramer. Thank you for being here, Zandra.
Thank you for inviting me. It's very good to be here.
In this episode of Law Out Loud, we are going to discuss my research project. This research is about party autonomy to choose the applicable law for international contract. It is also known as choice of law. Emerging trade and globalization have increased commercial transactions concluded between parties from different jurisdictions. As the rules on international contracting differ per country, choice of law plays an essential role in ensuring certainty and predictability of such transactions. This is the case, right, Zandra?
Yes, the choice of law secures the freedom of parties to determine in advance the law applicable to their contract within always certain parameters and limitations. Enabling a choice of law makes the party's intent the decisive factor for designating the law applicable to an international contract. Choice of law is a widely recognized doctrine in private international law and is commonly used by parties in international contracting. Can you give us maybe an example, Tita?
Yeah, one example to describe it is, for instance, a Japanese company and an Indonesian company chose Japanese law as the law applicable to their sale and purchase contract. By knowing from the very start the law that applies to their contract, the parties are somewhat assured about the certainty and predictability of their legal relationship.
Yeah, exactly. The phrase, the party's intent is a decisive factor, should be underlined. However, it's still very challenging to provide a satisfactory theoretical justification of the party's freedom to choose the law applicable to their contract. And even though it's generally accepted in practice and claimed as a cornerstone of international contracting, scholars have been arguing for decades to justify choice of law at a theoretical basis.
Yeah, I could not agree more, Zandra. From what I've learned, there are two principal perspectives that discourse this theoretical justification. First, choice of law is seen as part of contractual party autonomy within the scope of national legal order. This view argues, other than having the freedom to determine the terms and condition of their contract, the parties have also the freedom to choose the applicable law. Meanwhile, the second view observes the will of the parties as a self-standing notion. So it is not an extension of freedom of contract principle provided by national legal order. This view presumes that contracting parties are free to subject their contract to any law, customary principles of private law, or international conventions.
Yeah, indeed. And the consequences of this second view is that parties may exclude mandatory provisions of the chosen law. And it also means that they are not bound by any subsequent changes in the chosen law, unless, of course, they provide otherwise.
Yeah, and that for that reason, most countries follow the first view. It is the national law that allows the parties to choose the law for their contract. And I think it is the reason as well why the scope and limitation of choice of law vary among countries.
And this is actually the point where regional and international efforts to regulate and harmonize choice of law plays a very important role. And these efforts aim to ensure that the party's choice of law is respected in as many jurisdictions as possible. Let's look, for example, at the European Union. There we have the Rome I regulation, and also important, since 5 years, since 2015, we have the Hague Principles on Choice of Law in International Contracts, and that's an instrument at the global level. These principles were issued as a non-binding instrument to harmonize choice of law.
I think the Rome I regulations is the most advanced regional instrument on choice of law. There is also the Mexico Convention 1994 in the Latin America region. However, this convention does not function effectively because only Mexico and Venezuela have ratified it. So, given the ineffectiveness of the Mexico Convention and inspired by the Hague Principles, the Organization of American States published the Guide on the Law Applicable to International Commercial Contracts in the Americas in 2019. It is a non-binding legal instrument concerning choice of law in the Americas.
Now, that's an interesting development. If we go back to the EU, to add, this choice of law is not only for international contracts, but also for non-contractual obligations such as torts, and it is regulated in the Rome II regulation. The same goes, by the way, for succession law and matrimonial property.
Yeah, in that regard, the East Asian countries such as Japan, China, and South Korea have also extended their choice of law regime to non-contractual obligations, matrimonial property regimes, consensual divorce, and movable property.
Now, what's remarkable is that despite its wide recognition, that there are still countries that reject the choice of law or only accept it very limitedly. Some Latin American countries in particular are notorious for their rejection of choice of law. There has been an interesting ongoing debate about this.
Yes, and from what I have studied, Sandra, their rejection is due to the territorial principle, which precludes applying any law different to that of the forum. In other words, rejection of choice of law is purposed to protect national sovereignty. Meanwhile, in Africa, the discourse on choice of law is also rather rare due to the stagnation of private international law study there. However, along with the emerging international business transaction within Africa, the interest in private international law is lately increasing.
Oh, that's really good news. What I also observe is that some countries in Asia diverge when it comes to choice of law. As you just mentioned, Tita, Japan, South Korea, and China do accept the choice of law. Of course, they have different scope and also some limitations. But other countries are still somewhat reluctant to accept the choice of law.
Yes. I can speak a little bit in detail about choice of law in Indonesia, a country within the Southeast Asian region. So in its national laws, Indonesia recognizes the party's freedom to choose the law applicable to their international contract. However, when the Indonesian court must settle contractual disputes involving a choice of foreign law, the decisions can be categorized into two groups. The first category includes the decisions that mix up the notion of choice of foreign law and choice of foreign forum. Meanwhile, the second category encompasses the decisions that ignore the choice of foreign law by the parties.
Tita, since your research focuses on Indonesia, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, sure. So In the first category, the court employs the choice of foreign law to deny jurisdiction, regardless of the absence or existence of a choice of foreign forum by the parties. Well, the court should have or could have applied Indonesian jurisdictional rules in civil proceeding or the choice of foreign forum to refuse jurisdiction rather than employing the choice of foreign law argument. As to the second category, the court claims jurisdiction notwithstanding the choice of foreign forum contained in the disputed contracts. Furthermore, in examining the substantive matters of these disputes, the court disregards the choice of foreign law agreed by the parties, and it applies Indonesian law instead. In other words, the court ignores both the choice of foreign forum and the choice of foreign law.
Can you explain us why? Did the judges invoke mandatory rules or public order to refuse parties' choice of foreign law?
Well, none of the judgments that I have reviewed invoke mandatory rules or public order as the grounds to disregard the foreign law chosen by the parties. It is nonetheless challenging to comprehend the legal rationale employed by the judges because some decisions lack sufficient and convincing legal reasoning. Therefore, to find out more about it, I'm also doing interviews with judges and lawyers, and this interview is now still ongoing.
Well, that's a good development. And from what I understand, Tita, Indonesia is not a party to any convention concerning choice of law, and of course is also not a member of the Hague Conference on Private International Law, right?
Yes, you're right, Sandra. So Indonesia is not a party to any convention concerning choice of law, nor a member to the Hague Conference. So for the listeners who are not familiar with the Hague Conference on Private International Law, it is an intergovernmental organization whose main duty is to work for the unification of private international law rules. After the negotiation and adoption process involving its member countries, the Hague Conference issues multilateral conventions in the different fields of private international law. As you previously mentioned, Sandra, the Hague Conference issued a non-binding instrument known as the Hague Principles on Choice of Law in International Commercial Contract in 2015. However, Indonesia has not shown any interest in availing itself of this instrument as the guideline for choice of law to date.
Yeah, I think it's a pity that Indonesia is not yet closely involved in the Hague Conference, because I think Indonesia could take advantage of the Hague Conference on Private International Law and its instruments to advance private international law.
It is indeed, especially for choice of law, because an official Indonesian translation of the Hague Principles is also provided by the Hague Conference. So I think it should be easy for Indonesia to have recourse to this instrument.
I think it's also important to see what benefits can be gained by a country in enforcing choice of foreign law. In your case, what do you think are possible benefits for giving effect to a choice of foreign law in Indonesia?
To mark its 100th year of independence in 2045, the government of Indonesia has launched Indonesian Vision 2045. It aims to put Indonesia as the fifth biggest economy in the world and the best 10 countries in the World Bank's rank of ease of doing business. One of the measured indicators in this ease of doing business rank is contract enforcement. It means that providing a conducive legal environment for the cross-border transaction and ensuring the certainty and predictability of the contract enforcement become imperative. One strategy to respond to this is by establishing clear legal frameworks concerning choice of law and giving effect to what contracting parties have agreed, but surely within certain limits and parameters. Without this, I think the time to achieve the goals of the Indonesian Vision 2045 will merely be in vain.
Yeah, I agree. Indeed, contract enforcement is very important for international business. Well, Tita, your research is still ongoing, and I think it's very interesting, and I'm also very happy to be your supervisor. I look forward to seeing the final results of your research.
Thank you very much, Sandra. I'm excited and yet curious as well about the result of this research. I do hope that It can contribute to the study of private international law and especially to the private international law progress in Indonesia.
So that was a very interesting discussion. Clearly you share great enthusiasm for the big questions in private international law. I think what you've discussed towards the end there, where you refer specifically to Indonesia, that really brings us back to the core themes of Law Out Loud. So Indonesia has an economy which is developing rapidly, but legal adaptation is required in order to make sure that the Indonesian economy and the people of Indonesia fully benefit from the increase in trade and cross-border commerce, which have resulted from globalization. So, from international commerce to financial regulation. In the next episode, we'll be joined by another PhD candidate, Matthijs Giltjes, who will be explaining to us and to his senior the new phenomenon of high-frequency trading and how best to regulate it. So join us next time on Law Out Loud. And for now, thank you again, Tita, and thank you, Zandra.
My pleasure.
Join us next time.